It's a much more exciting world now. We literally, you were picking between 10 or 20 different options of sports or media celebrities at the time and taking a huge risk and spending a lot of money. And now, as you said, the choice is so broad. But I think what's different is that, you know, each of these influencers, especially at the mid-sized influencers, they're earning and building their authenticity, their followers, their engagement every day. And so as a result, they have to be genuine, because if they push something that they don't believe in and their followers are disappointed by it, they won't have a platform. So it's really for the best of them. They've really created this layer of trust, this trust metric that you're actually partnering with them on as you share your product with them. And I think to really leverage it, though, you have to be willing to do two things with influencers. You have to be willing to take your complete offering and just put it on display to either be loved or to be critiqued. And you have to be okay with that. And then number two, you have to give up total control of how that message is communicated. This is no longer a back in the studio editing clips for weeks and getting it just right and then putting it on air. This is offering your product to an influencer and saying, post or don't post, love it, don't love it. It's totally up to you.
Welcome to another episode of our Traction Podcast. This is The Next Wave. The Next Wave is a different take on our podcast where we're bringing back some of our most favorite guests that have either graced our stage or joined our podcast 10 years ago, 5 years ago. And we're going to revisit their topics to see, do they still hold up in today's world of AI? Traction is brought to you by LaunchAcademy.ca, one of Western Canada's main tech hubs and an international accelerator program that provides you access to the Canadian Startup Visa, as well as Boast.ai, your go-to partner for R&D tax credits. Hey, this week's guest is Joseph Thompson. Joseph is co-founder and COO of Kits.com. He was one of the very first speakers at Traction in 2015, graced our stage in Vancouver. Joseph is a co-founder of Kits Eye Care right now. He launched that in Vancouver in 2018, and it's one of the fastest growing optical companies globally and the fastest to grow from launch to $150 million in revenue. It's traded on the TSX under the ticker Kits, K-I-T-S. Prior to Kits, Joseph had 20 plus years experience leading organizations at Amazon, at Procter & Gamble, with assignments in Cincinnati, Boston, Shanghai, and Toronto. So he has some Canadian experience. He is in Canada now, but he is a global entrepreneur. Joseph, welcome to the Next Wave podcast.
Always great to see you, Ray.
Now, in 2015, your topic was the future of branding. Branding is pretty universal, but it has evolved and changed over the years. And today we're going to really take a look back at some of the concepts and strategies that you shared with us in 2015 and see how has that evolved and changed today in 2024. Joseph, we're going to start off by playing a clip. So let's rewind and see, what did Joseph say in 2015?
A lot of time on that first question is, I think, too often the opposite. And if you see a lot of content that's out there now, and a lot of discussion, it's what's your strategy on Pinterest, or what's your unique strategy on Facebook, or what's your unique strategy here? And how do you build that from the ground up? And I think if you've got a couple hundred million dollars in your marketing fund and in your product fund, then that could be a reasonable thing to do. But there's probably only a handful of brands in North America that have that. And if you're building small and if you're building scrappy, it's much more effective to spend the time on the hard stuff.
So that was your three-step approach to branding. Obviously, we don't have time for changes. But what has changed over the last almost 9-10 years now?
Yeah, it's fun to look back. What's endured and what did I get wrong? I still think that construct of start with a powerful insight with a customer as the hero and at the center, and find a way to be really heart and mind opening in the communication and just forget about the channel, put that aside, leave the medium for last. I think that has endured. I think that structure is even more important now than it was 10 years ago. I think it's just put the focus on making a great product and making a great product experience. But there's a bunch of things I think probably that have changed. Looking at that clip, what did I get wrong? I think I probably underestimated the speed of evolution of some of these media channels. They went just so quickly from an emerging channel to mainstream to and sometimes consolidation, and then quickly to monetization. And I don't think maybe any of us expected how monetization would play such a big role and have such an impact for brands. as all of the social channels, they just started charging and started charging top dollars. And at times, some of them even took a bit of a darker turn. There's some mediums like even Facebook and Instagram, where really the focus at times has been really to hook you into a behavior. And so where else did I get it wrong?
Let's take a step back here. So again, 2015 seems like a long time ago, but it wasn't really that long ago. And at that time, TV was still very heavy as a medium. Print was going on the wayside, but people were still putting ads in magazines and newspapers and whatnot. And social media, Facebook was a predominant player at that time. And again, nobody really saw a lot of this coming. Hey, this is especially from an advertising perspective, it was like pulling teeth trying to get PR agencies, ad agencies to put money into social. Everybody wanted to put money into TV and radio and other mediums.
Yeah.
Nobody even heard of podcasts back then. So, but again, hindsight, we were able to see that, okay, there were some real mishaps around how Facebook handled ads and how people leverage it, but it doesn't change the fact that it blew up, and it blew up fast, and it was caught a lot of people off guard of how fast social media and social content was going to be dominant in marketing and PR and branding.
I think that's right on. And for me, though, I look at what were some of the side effects that impact brands and marketing teams and organizations. And so maybe one of the things that I hadn't predicted that really emerged was this focus away from the hard work of establishing that powerful insight and the heart mind opening communication. And it almost shifted to these, as you said, these channels were so big and so important that companies then started to go sideways into, maybe we should hire these growth hackers to go and solve this one component of this one channel, and that will be our hack. And in my opinion, these tricks just, they don't endure. They might buy you a day or a month, but they don't last. And so the companies, in my experience, it really focused on this growth hacking or just leveraging one medium or one channel only. It was very hard for them to endure. And when the conditions changed and profitability became more important, these are the companies that really saw the hardest times. And the companies that went the other way and maybe didn't see quite as many highs by not going chips in on one media as it was exploding and investing heavily into it, those are the ones that just had a stronger foundation, in my view.
Yeah, and again, it was not that long ago, over the nine years, Facebook was very dominant, but other mediums started coming in, Twitter. But then you saw this big shift from a lot of text-based ads and content to visual ads, and that was Instagram, Snapchat, and now we're seeing TikTok. So what do you feel was really the thing that tipped the scale of, okay, this is the new medium that, or social is the new channels that we need to leverage above TV? Is it the cost? Is it the reach? Is it the flexibility, the turnaround times? What really made it the killer solution for getting your message out and building a brand around?
Yeah, I think it was the speed of creation. You could really create content pretty quickly, and the tracking capabilities. It became almost addictive. This, I could put, you know, money in and I could see immediately who saw, who didn't see. And that was a totally different landscape than what we used to see, where you'd buy a big TV campaign and you'd wait weeks or in some case months to see the impact. In this case, you could get it in hours or even minutes in some cases.
And we're here in North America, and right now today it's Instagram, it's TikTok. Those are probably the dominant platforms. X is having a little bit of a resurgence, but it's definitely changed since the old Twitter days. But geographically speaking, Facebook isn't that prominent here in North America as was in 2016, 2017, 2018, but it is still very dominant in other parts of the world. Like you go to Brazil, you go to Southeast Asia, Facebook is very heavily used, more so than it is here in North America. But then you also spend a lot of time in China, and they have a whole other ecosystem there of social channels and whatnot. They've got their walled garden and different reasons why they want those channels to be dominant. But then you look at Korea. South Korea is very open, but they have their own channel, Kakao and others. What did you experience? Because they were going down the social route faster than we were in North America. So did you see the stuff coming? Did you see any of these social channels really flourishing in those Asian markets prior to them hitting North America?
Yeah, in China, when I was in Shanghai, they were definitely ahead of North America on social adoption and just things like influencers or social shopping. These things would come to mainstream much faster. And they're in the process of getting to scale in North America, but these are trends we saw 5 and 10 years ago in Asia.
And social shopping, this is something that you and I had some very funny conversations around. This is something that's new to North America. Even right now, you say social shopping, people are like, what does that mean? You could go to Instagram, you can go to TikTok. There are embedded links. They have the ability to create your own little channel, but that's not really true social shopping. What is social shopping for our audience?
Yeah. So I think it's just getting started, right? I think
it's very prevalent in Asia, and there's a ton of money being made from social shopping by individuals.
It probably doesn't make any sense when you say it out loud, but it's really in the same way Twitch is a platform where you could log on and literally watch other people play video games. Social shopping is the same, but just watch other people go shopping. And it sounds ridiculous, but then when you see it, you're watching someone say, hey, I need a new pair of glasses or a new coat and come shop with me. And before you know it, you're 2-3 minutes in going, oh, geez, I hope she chooses the red one. and you're hooked and you learn something and you feel this connection. So
yeah, because it's kind of going down the whole reality TV type of stream. Like we've seen haul videos on YouTube and even on Instagram where these are young individuals that are going out shopping, but you really see the aftermath. Like they've come home and say, hey, let me show you what I bought at the mall today. And they're going through 20 different bags and putting stuff up. But a social shopping experience in Asia is quite different in the sense that their objective is to sell you on things and they're getting affiliate links, they're getting commissions off of these things. Like we talked about this one young lady, pretty much blew up all over the internet where she was doing items, just flashing them for like 2 seconds on screen and it's off. And she's speaking, obviously, in Mandarin, but she's saying something about the product, boom, it's gone. Next product, boom, it's gone. Next product, boom, it's gone. But then you see the view from her angle. She's got like 100 cameras all around her just filming her doing this. And these are all different channels, all different brands that are trying to leverage her for her influence. Was that even a concept that could this possibly happen back in 2015? Or because you were GM of retail at Amazon, right? So you had a front row seat at a lot of online retail e-commerce experiences, but this phenomenon.
I think it's actually starting now in the U.S. market. I think on Amazon.com in the U.S. you can go and they're starting to test these live video shopping experiences. And so, but it was pretty slow to come to North America. I thought it would actually come a little bit faster, but it's a really fun channel. It's a fun way for the target audience to engage in the brand, engage in the experience in a really authentic way. And so I think for me, it's back to, okay, what's the insight? How are you making customers' lives better? And then how are you communicating it in a heart and mind opening way? And if it's a customer who's experiencing it and their reaction is live, then that's it, super engaging. Mm-hmm. And it's inviting people in. It's very different than when we used to make Super Bowl ads for Gillette and you would agonize over every frame on a 30-second commercial for months and spend millions of dollars. This is really the opposite, but I think it's more fun this way.
Yeah, that authenticity is what really ultimately transcends and gets people to convert. But on the topic of Super Bowl ads and celebrity endorsements, I've got another clip here.
I shot a bunch of commercials with Tiger Woods and we're ready to go to air. And the theme was how Tiger was a champion, both, you know, on and off the golf course as a human being. And that was the exact week we finished the editing was an unfortunate week for him and ended up being an unfortunate week for us too.
So celebrity endorsements, Tiger. I'm a big fan of Tiger, but he has his ups and downs. Just like any major celebrity, you end up relying on them. But the challenge is these are not cheap contracts. You're spending millions and millions of dollars and one thing like that goes wrong and it's all out the window. Whereas now you're going after social influencers and there's hundreds of thousands of them to choose from. What is the difference between an individual social influencer on Instagram as opposed to a major celebrity? Obviously, there's the following. You have somebody with 80 million fans as opposed to somebody with a million fans. But the big difference that you've seen over the past few years of going with a bankable celebrity as opposed to working with influencers?
It's a much more exciting world now. We literally, you were picking between 10 or 20 different options of sports or media celebrities at the time and taking a huge risk and spending a lot of money. And now, as you said, the choice is so broad. But I think what's different is that, you know, each of these influencers, especially at the mid-sized influencers, micro-influencers, they're earning and building their authenticity, their followers, their engagement every day. And so as a result, they have to be genuine. Because if they push something that they don't believe in and their followers are disappointed by it, they won't have a platform. So it's really, for the best of them, they've really created this layer of trust, this trust metric that you're actually partnering with them on as you share your product with them. And I think to really leverage it, though, you have to be willing to do two things with influencers. You have to be willing to take your complete offering and just put it on display to either be loved or to be critiqued. And you have to be okay with that. And then number two, you have to give up total control of how that message is communicated. This is no longer a back in the studio editing clips for weeks and getting it just right and then putting it on air. This is offering your product to an influencer and saying, post or don't post, love it, don't love it. It's totally up to you. And then they post when they want and you watch it at the same time everybody else does.
And you hit on something there as something very recent where you will leverage, and this is actually TV, this is not social media, but there was an incident on the Canadian version of Dragon's Den. A boba company out of Montreal, I believe, was on Dragon's Den, and Simu Liu, who many of you guys might know from Shang-Chi, he's an action superhero TV star, he's one of the dragons. And this boba company was called out by him for a well-sensed purpose, cultural appropriation. It's a Taiwanese drink. He's Taiwanese. But they were having some different angles to boba, and they're claiming that it's for the general public now. I don't want to defend either angle here, but to your point, when you take these type of social media risks, you really have to let go of your brand and deal with what happens. And that's a tough thing to do. It was very tough for old school marketers to really wrap their heads around, like, okay, well, I have no control over the copy. I have no control over the actual, so it's going to come out and the aftermath. It's hard.
Yeah, no, for sure. And when we put stuff up there, you actually don't even know if it will come to light. But it's everything is a feedback signal. So if you're partnering with 5, 10, 100 influencers, and only a small percentage of them are excited about the product or posting it in a way that you're excited about, that's a signal back to you as well. And so, of course, you could hire consultants to go and reach out to them and convince them that but it's really a signal back to you to say, are we building a great product? Are we building a great product experience? And when you do, when you have that, you don't have to do the work as much. You send this out and then great things can happen. If people are genuinely positively surprised by the product and the product experience, they almost want to tell others about it. And I think that's really the excitement of this influencer channel. And to the point where we've said, we try to have a scarcity mentality with all of our marketing spend. Even as we grow, we keep marketing very fixed at 12 to 14% of revenue. And as we've grown 30% over the last couple of years each year, we've actually declined marketing spend as a percentage of revenue. And in our view, the best, most creative ideas, the best creativity comes from scarcity and comes from constraints. And so that has really focused us and our team on, well, the best way for our brand Kits to travel in the US and Canada is if every customer is an influencer. And so that's the mentality that, you know, that our marketing team takes every day. We think we partner with influencers and we have some great influencers that have done great work on Kits, but we really look to every customer as an influencer because they're the best marketing that we can invest in.
And you and your team are definitely a group that practice what their preaches. And we got another clip here of You've given up control.
The coolest branding I have ever seen. Kits. This is a box of glasses. The entire box of glasses. We're going to try them on pair. This is a Canadian brand. I had never heard of them before. They reached out. They just wanted to send me some frames. I'm going to bring glasses. Look how fucking sick their design. This is kind of like a tissue paper, and this was just PR. This is not sponsored. I sent them my prescription, so I'm assuming these are prescription. Are you kidding?
So that's obviously a gamble. You send something randomly to an individual. I'm assuming that was not a paid advertisement. That was, what's the actual terminology when you give something out to somebody to hopefully get them cover your product? And again, you're blindly putting faith in them that it's going to be positive, but it could go negative. But that, she seemed excited.
Yeah, that was a really fun one. And you're right. That wasn't a paid partnership at all. Our team had seen some of the work that Christina had done. And we're big fans. And so just said, hey, send us your prescription. We'll send you a couple of pairs of glasses. And so then they moved on to the next thing. And then one morning, I get a call from our operations team. And they said, Joe, we're getting thousands of orders. What, you got to tell us when you're running a promotion so we could get organized. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. Give me a minute. And of course, we found that Christina just posted this video unbeknownst to us to TikTok. And we had a record day, a record week on the back of that. And there's many examples like that Christina video that we've seen. And for us, it was really just the power of have the conviction of your product, that you've built a great product and a great unboxing and a great experience. And then have the courage to just send that out into the world and be judged. And I'm sure we'll have, you know, customers and influencer partners who don't have as great an experience and post about that as well. And we have to be okay with it. But contrast that Christina video with the work we would have done even 9 or 10 years ago when we were last talking about branding, where we would literally be going frame by frame to perfect it, agonize over which words to use, which words not to use. And she just opened a box, turned the iPhone on, recorded it, posted it, and then it was done. And the response has been amazing. I the only negative response I got was I was so excited about it. I posted it, the video after it came out to LinkedIn. And the first call I got was actually from my mom, who said, I watched that video and that young lady said the F word at least 3 times. And you need to talk to her about that. So it's not perfect for everybody, for sure. But it was certainly great for our business.
But it's that authenticity that resonates with her followers. And that's what led to that flood of orders that came through, because, hey, if Christina likes it, I like what she likes, and this is probably a good thing for me to try as well. How are you and your team identifying influencers or groups to work with? Because there's literally millions and millions of people out there. What are some of the tips and advice that you can give to our audience?
We've got a great team that is just really thoughtful about working for the customer backwards. And so they start with identifying the target market for us in optical is the millennial consumer, 28 to 43 years old, prime optical age, very high standards, but it will be really loyal to a brand if you meet those high standards. And so they reach out to a number of different, a very small to mid-size influencers. We always want to start with a low-cost model, prove it out, tinker a little bit, and then earn the right to move up in the marketing stack. And so we haven't really the big influencers yet. We've been overwhelmed with the success of these smaller micro-influencers because they've just got such fabulous engagement, because each of these influencers, it's their own brand. They're not going to be excited about something that they're not excited about. Because they need that following to come back. And so, yeah, so I think it's just a lot of experiment and then just having the conviction of if you've built a great product experience, put it out there and don't worry too much about exactly how it's communicated. Just trust that your product is a winner and doing great things for customers and then let go.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are starting to come around on micro-influencers and understanding the value that they bring, because you could have a celebrity that's got 40 million, 80 million followers, but the engagement level is low. Yes, the views are great, but ultimately you want sales. You want people clicking through and checking out your website. Whereas the micro-influencers that might only have 50,000, 100,000 followers, the actual engagement is a lot higher. You're going to get like a, compared like a 2% click through to a 50% click through. That's huge. And those ultimately translates into sales and brand recognition. I'll give a quick shout out to two of my portfolio companies, Creator.co. Creator.ca is a great platform to identify influencers that are resonate with your brand, and Later.com that was incubated right here, and Launch Academy. Some great success stories that you should check out. Going back to the concept of giving up control, you guys ran another campaign, the city campaign.
Mm-hmm.
That was something where, again, it's a big gamble. You were sharing how that came about and what ultimately has come from that.
Sure. Yeah. It's like anything, it's an evolution. You just have to keep tinkering, keep working on it and building. So we said, yeah, we're launching our glasses business. We think we've taken the cost out of the system without sacrificing any of the quality. So how are we going to get the word out there? And we said, we're so confident that the product is better, the experience is better. The first thing we did, our launch campaign, before we even got to the city campaign, was we offered free glasses, free prescription glasses. We called it Get Your First Pair Free. If you'd never made a transaction on kits.com in the US or kits.ca in Canada, we just give you a free pair of prescription glasses. And at the time, nobody believed it. There's all this chatter online about nothing's free anymore. What's the catch? But it created this conversation. And it was a big risk for us. And we were very uneasy in the moment because it's a huge investment. And if these customers try it out and never come back, that's just money that we've lost. And we paid a lot to get that signal back. But fortunately, what we saw was hundreds of thousands of customers tried this first pair free. And we had such confidence in, because we have local manufacturing, which we do. We make the glasses ourselves right here in Vancouver, so we can get them to a customer in a day or two. And so this customer takes a chance on us, they place their order and they forget about it. But then we would get to work and make their prescription glasses in about an hour and get them to them in a day. And there's, you know, the customer would open the door the next day and there's this kids box on the doorstep. And they were like, no way, you know, the glasses cost $300. They take 2 weeks. You guys gave them to me for free and you ship them to me in a day. What's the catch? And so our customer service team was getting these calls like, we don't get it. What, you know, what's the catch? And what they said was, the catch is tell everyone, because really, if every one of your customers is an influencer, you don't have to do any marketing ever, because they'll just spread the word on how great the experience could be. So that was our starting point. And then we evolved that a little bit more into influencers. And what we learned with the Christina video and others like it is, people live in communities and movements start in local areas and communities. So, you know, Christina was living in LA and we saw these orders, hundreds and then thousands of them, all in one area in LA. And so that just sparked the thought with with our marketing team on, if we want to start a movement, of course you can start it coast to coast, but it costs you hundreds of millions of dollars to do and build that kind of awareness. But if we could really localize our efforts, and we called it Own This Town, and just put some surge advertising in place in a community for a short period of time, maybe 1 month or 6 weeks, case 8 weeks, really build up that awareness. And to the point where, you know, you almost at town or in that city, kits can't be missed. And so we tried this campaign on this town out this past summer in Vancouver, and it was a huge success. And so now we're rolling that out to 20 different towns or cities across North America over the next couple of years. And it just really helped us focus with our marketing spend. And then just create that movement. People want to be part of what they hear people talking about. And in some cities, that could be bus advertising. In some cities, it could be metro advertising. In some cities, it's get the mayor involved. And you have influencers and media that are customized. And in this world now, it's where everything is, the world is flat and everyone's using three platforms to communicate. There's still, people underestimate the importance of community and the power of local. And when they see something and they really feel like, wow, this is something that everyone in my community is a part of and they're giving back and contributing to this community, I want to be a part of that too. So it's early days for us, but we're super optimistic about where this one's going to go.
Yeah, I'm dating myself, but back when I was in school taking marketing classes, it was called guerrilla marketing. And then 10 years ago, it was growth hacking. And now it's just par for the course. Like, you have to think outside the box. You have to look at unconventional ways to get your message out. And to that localized opportunity. Yes, you've got a social influencer that puts it out there, but her fan following is localized in a community. And so you're going to have dinner with friends. Hey, what's different? Oh, you got new glasses. Yeah, got them from Kits. Got them. Oh, I saw that video. And so you're seeing this virality that actually happens IRL right there within friend groups that may be following the same person or may not, but it has that influence.
Yeah, bingo. That's exactly it. It's that, and before you know it, if you feed in, again, it's all back to that foundation. Do you have a great product? Do you have a great experience? Are you solving a real problem for a customer? But if you do, and you have confidence in that, it actually, once you get it going, it's actually harder to slow it down than it is to speed it up. And I just remember I knew we had the concept one day on this town where we could see it happening. We'd see the orders coming. We'd hear people saying, I've been hearing about this company Kits. Let me tell you about it. I ordered a pair. They got to my house the next day. But when it really hit home was one day my daughter was at school and her teacher came in and the kids were all like, oh, you get a new pair of glasses. And he said, yeah, I got a new pair of glasses. There's this local company that I've heard about. It's called Kits. They're right here in Vancouver. And they made me these glasses and they came the next day. And so my daughter could put up her hand and say, that's my dad's company. And so for me, that was just a signal that getting out there, and this is a really fun, responsible, and just exciting way to grow Kits and to do it town by town.
Awesome. This is a great segue. I want to go to being responsible and play a clip that you said on stage back in 2015 at Traction in Vancouver.
People think about marketing, they think about brand, and they think that it's just the message. And it's obviously the message and the product that you build around that. And it's also the organization, because the way your company acts, and I think now more than ever, probably more than ever in history, it's more about what you do than what you say.
So it's more about what you do than what you say. And being authentic is something that we've alluded to quite a bit in this podcast today. What have you seen over the last 9-10 years with regards to social pressure to do or act a certain way as a brand? Obviously, DEI, ESG are things that are real. And then Black Lives Matter, Me Too, these are all things that have driven change, but it required brands to take a conscious look to what they're doing and how they wanted to be perceived. What are your thoughts? How did you see this evolve from your viewpoint?
Sure. Yeah. And we're still a fairly new company. We're just under 6 years since we started the company. So we're still very much students of the market and trying to learn as much as we can. I think that it's still a sentiment that is true, though. For a company, what you do is more important than what you say. And I think as these conversations have spread, there's been a tendency to just be reactionary on, we're going to do this one thing, or let's send products to just this pocket of people, or let's do X, or let's just do Y. And so I think for us as a new company, we said, okay, how can we do good? And that's one of our core values at Kits, is doing good. And we always want to make sure that we're starting with the core product. We ran a survey in Canada recently, and we found that one out of every two Canadians delays the purchase of prescription glasses when they need them because they just cost too much money. And so certainly we could send people around the world and invest and build teams and plans to do that to help with eyesight issues around the world. That's definitely something likely that we will do in time. But to start as a new young company, that's something immediately right in front of us. One out of every two Canadians that needs corrective eyeglasses to get through the day, to see the chalkboard or to see the screen at work, is delaying that purchase because they're too expensive. And our number one focus has got to be to take the waste out of the system and to solve that at scale in Canada and the US. And so that's, for us, that's driving the decision of, how can we take the waste out of the system? How do we not spend too much money on marketing? Somebody has to pay for that. And as a result, that's allowed us, how do we do the manufacturing ourselves so that we're not paying third parties, and do it onshore here so we don't have courier costs? And so if the price of prescription glasses on average last year was in the market $350, we're happy to charge $28 to $38 all in for prescription glasses, delivered anywhere in Canada or the US. And so for us, that's the foundation. And then from there, what else can we build to do good and in an area where we're experts?
That's really admirable. So we've looked back for the last 10 years. What's changed? What's evolved? We've looked at what's happening today. I want to take a few minutes to talk about what the next 10 years looks like. AI is everywhere. And in the terms of marketing and branding, people are using AI avatars to represent their brands. They're using AI to generate the new campaigns and videos. Where do you see AI really affecting or impacting marketing and branding over the next 10 years?
Yeah, we're seeing it. We're seeing it already. And I think as things come into they tend to be misunderstood a little bit. I think we, and so people focus on only one segment of where AI will contribute. Things like, okay, automated call centers or chatbots. And certainly that's low hanging fruit. And we're doing those things and we're at the front of the curve on innovating on that side. But then there's also the stuff that AI is really helping contribute a better customer experience. Our mission at Kits is to make eye care easy. Every part of eye care just needs to be easy. You know, as our team looks at every part of the purchase decision of buying eye care, we're constantly asking ourselves, could this be easier? Could this be easier? And so two areas where AI is helping is on the content creation, where we can create content where previously you'd really need 10, 12, 15 content writers for email, and you can now customize things with AI and reach a customer much more in a much more custom way with some of these tools. We can organize our inventory in a way where we carry millions of SKUs. And so the power of these large, it's really helped us optimize our inventory position so that we almost know from traffic to order to history to trending forward across millions of different SKUs that we carry, what we need when we need it, so that you're more likely to come on kits.ca in Canada, find the product you need and get it the next day versus us having to back order that. So those are a couple immediate, probably not obvious areas where it's helping make eye care easy for us. And then what's really exciting for us is when you think about your iPhone, you unlock your iPhone with your face probably 20, 30 times a day. And the setup of that face ID has all the information, that 30 seconds that you do when you set that up and you get a new phone, has all the information in it to capture your face shape and allow us to deliver to you perfectly fitting custom. So we think the technology is just going to advance rapidly now as the market really moves online. Millennials are driving every category, especially eye care online more and more. And we think as AI on Face ID comes more to the mainstream, we're going to be able to offer an even better experience online than someone could get in store. So we're super invested and bullish in where AI is going to go in the next 3 to 5 years.
And then the other side of the coin is AR. So augmented reality and smart glasses are all the trend right now. Like we've seen Meta and Ray-Ban, and I know you guys have quite a few other brands that you guys carry. What are your thoughts on smart glasses and the trends that are?
It's very early days, but it's moving fast. And they're some of our best sellers. We sell the Meta glasses on kits. And so as a form factor, it's just very helpful. And if you've ever tried a pair of smart glasses on, whether it's just the Bluetooth audio that you get, so you can listen to a podcast, check ChatGPT or something, hey, I'm seeing something, what is this that I'm looking at, or what time is my next meeting, or answer a phone call without having to reach for your phone. It's a very helpful form factor to do it because you're already wearing them for those of us who are wearing glasses. And as we add cameras and videos to it and the functionality grows, there's many folks that feel that it'll be even more impactful than smartwatches. But we'll see how fast it evolves. Some form factors evolve more quickly. With smartwatches, it was about, from the moment that Apple announced the first Apple Watch, it was 5 years before the total smartwatch market overtook smartwatches, and it's never going back. So it was a 5-year journey. Smart glasses may be 2 or 3 years, it may be 5. But we think it's a very interesting form factor. You're already wearing them. the technology, for those that haven't tried it, it's worth trying. It's freeing. You could be out and get a phone call and just say, hey, Siri, answer the call and not have to reach for your phone.
Yeah, as you said, it's still very early days, but the possibilities are endless with not tethering yourself to the phone anymore. And you have everything happening right there in your line of sight. It's exciting times. Joseph, this has been a really great conversation. We've taken a look back, a look forward, and hopefully this is going to be a new wave of tech in the not just eye care business, but marketing, branding, social influencers. Joseph, I want to close it out by giving you a chance to give our audience a call to action. What can our audience do for you?
I'm still wondering, when are we going to do our social shopping to get you a pair of eyeglasses? I think the people want to see what you choose.
Actually, I wore glasses almost all my life. I got LASIK surgery, but I'm getting to the age where I'm probably going to need glasses again. But this is actually something I've been questioning myself. I'm a techie. I'm an early adopter of all tech, but I haven't jumped on the Meta bandwagon yet because I'd stopped wearing glasses. So what are your thoughts on people that don't wear glasses? Are they going to start, people that don't need glasses, are they going to start wearing glasses just to have that AR flexibility and opportunity at their fingertips? It's like sunglasses. Like, you wear sunglasses, but there's a reason. You're trying to block the sun. Are you going to see more and more people just wearing smart glasses for everyday work?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And resistance is futile. We're coming for you one day. You're going to need vision correction at some point again, and we'll be ready for you. But yeah, I think you're right. And there's sun, there's blue light blocking. We're just learning more and more about the impact of all these screens and indoor lighting that's having. And a lot of folks just really like the opportunity to have a different accessory. And that accessory, it doesn't make sense if it's $350 for a pair of glasses with blue light lenses, but at $28 or $38 at Kits, all of a sudden that's very accessible accessory. And if it's helping your eyes, preventing the denigration from screen time, then it's productive and fun at the same time. So I think you're right about that. For call to action, we've just been so fortunate. Home base matters, as we say. And as Roger and I just look back on starting Kits and the wild and exciting and crazy ride that it's been to build it to approaching $1 revenue run rate and growing, we're just so fortunate to have Vancouver as the backdrop, where you have, it's almost an unfair advantage starting a company in Vancouver. You got access to phenomenal talent, folks that really are excited about building and excited about the market that they're in. And you got this backdrop of companies that's been started here that is so impressive. And for us, it's really, we to new companies and say, if we can help anyone and give back in any way to the community, just reach out to us. I'm joe@kits.com. And we'd love to talk to you and tell you about our journey. And we just think Vancouver is a fantastic place to start a business. And we're, you know, thrilled with the market and the team and the business that we have.
That's awesome. I love the Vancouver shout outs. Obviously, I'm based in Vancouver as well, but Kits is available all over North America and I believe even internationally.
Yeah, stay tuned for more on that front. But yeah, we ship anywhere in the globe, kits.com in the US and kits.ca in Canada. And we'd love to, if you have any questions about any product, there are some customers that they've just not bought eyewear online. We have a whole team of folks ready and willing to help with that first purchase. So just reach out to me, joe@kits.com, and we're happy to help and hopefully turn more customers into influencers and then on we go.
Yeah, you don't just have to take Joe's word for it. Christina is
That's right.
A happy Kits customer as well. Joe, this has been awesome. Thank you for your time and check out kits.com.
Thanks, Ray.
This episode is brought to you by Boast.ai. Each year, the US and Canadian governments give out billions of dollars in R&D tax credits and innovation incentives to fund businesses like yours. But the application process is cumbersome, prone to frustrating audits, and receiving the money can take up to 16 months. Boast.ai gets you access to research and development tax credits and innovation funding opportunities without the headache and red tape. Join thousands of North American companies leveraging Boast AI software to maximize cashback. Check out www.boast.ai.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed
this week's episode of the Traction Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star review. And you can find more information and all the resources mentioned in today's episode at boast.ai. That's boast.ai/blog. A hypocrite. No, I've done some silly shit. Focused on the tech stack, thinking it was brilliant. Now I know that it's no way for you to build a unicorn. You need distribution to get growth.